We are going to continue our series, Train Up a Child. And so most of you were in here last week, the youth, you weren't, so I'll kind of tell you what I'm doing. So I decided to put together a series based on children's stories and or nursery rhymes or tongue twisters or fairy tales or really whatever kid stuff I decided I wanted to use. So last week we talked about Peter Piper picking his peck of pickled peppers. You know what's funny about that? So the only reason I said that was because Nikki said that earlier. And so immediately as I was about to say that, I said, okay, don't do what Nikki did. And then I did exactly that. All right. So that was last week, pickling peppers. And so this week, we're going to look at another tongue twister with a question. So how much wood would a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck could chuck wood? All right, so this unanswered question has plagued us for over a century. The origin of the phrase is from a 1902 song called The Woodchuck Song, written by Robert Hobart Davis for Faye Templeton in the musical The Runaways. The typical answers to this question are almost all the same, but they have some slight variations in how you say them. Now, I would ask if anybody here knows the answer, but apparently Nate does, and so I don't want him saying it too quickly. So we're going to skip that, and we're going to say, but before we can understand the answer, we have to understand a question. So let's take a closer look. So first, what the heck is a woodchuck? Now, does anybody know? Nate, do you know what a woodchuck is? Okay, they're like beavers. Okay. Okay, yeah. Whistle pigs. Man, you guys, y'all like research woodchucks this week or what? So, all right, so according to Wikipedia, the ultimate source, the groundhog, known as the Marmota monax, is also known as a woodchuck. It is a rodent of the family Sciuridae, belonging to the group of large ground squirrels known as marmots. The groundhog is a lowland creature of North America. It is found through much of the eastern United States, across Canada, and into Alaska. It was first scientifically described by Carl Linnaeus in 1758. The groundhog is also referred to as a chuck, woodchuck, ground pig, whistle pig, whistler, thickwood badger, Canada marmot, monax, moonak, weenusk, red monk, land beaver, and among French Canadians in eastern Canada, siflu. So different than all the other names, wasn't it? But that's a lot of names. Like, I mean, for what, I mean, I guess our probably most common would be groundhog, right? So you've got, you know, Groundhog Day and that kind of thing. So, yeah, it was interesting when I read that. So, all right, so now that we know what a woodchuck is, what does it mean to chuck? Well, according to the Oxford Dictionary, to chuck means to throw something carelessly or casually. So if a woodchuck doesn't chuck wood, what does it actually chuck? Dirt. So they create their dens by burrowing into the ground. The average woodchuck den is around 35 square feet. All of the dirt that was in that space has to go somewhere, and it does right up to the surface where they chuck it. So if a woodchuck doesn't chuck wood, then how did it get the name woodchuck? Like, how does somebody come up with that? They're like, oh, look at this tiny little brown creature and all the dirt that he's chucking everywhere. Wonder what we should call him. I know. Let's call him a woodchuck. Now, it is actually believed that the name woodchuck was the American translation or interpretation of the Cree Indian word woochak, which is what they called him. So, how much wood would a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck could chuck wood? There's one fairly universal answer, comes in slightly different variations. A woodchuck would chuck all the wood he could if a woodchuck could chuck wood. The answer is completely and utterly useless. After decades of wondering and pondering this life-altering conundrum and constantly receiving such a nonsensical answer every time he asked, Richard Thomas, a fish and wildlife technician, said, "Enough is enough." Inspired by the owl who solved the ancient riddle of how many licks it takes to get to the Tootsie Roll center of a Tootsie Pop, which is three, in case you were wondering, he declared, "I'm going to figure out exactly how much wood a woodchuck would chuck if a woodchuck could chuck wood. The world deserves an answer if it's the last thing that I do." Now, none of that is true, okay? Not a word of it. This part is, well, I say not a word of it. Some of it is. But with the average woodchuck's home being 35 square feet, Thomas did a bit of grade school math, multiplying 35 square feet by 20 pounds, which is the approximate weight of a square foot of soil, to achieve what is believed to be the most accurate answer ever discovered to this age-old mystery, 700 pounds of wood. So now, if you're ever on the game show, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?, and they ask you the question, how much wood would a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck could chuck wood? You can look them straight in the eye and say, 700 pounds, final answer. I thought that was funny. All right, anyways. Okay, so. All right, so now you're saying, okay, Chris, thanks for the life-altering revelation here. But what does this have to do with me? Well, the underlying problem with this riddle is that in wondering how much wood would a woodchuck chuck, if a woodchuck could chuck wood, it completely downplays and even ignores the fact that a woodchuck can chuck a lot of dirt. So as we sit and we ponder how much wood could possibly be chucked, we miss out on all the dirt that is chucked. And have you ever said to yourself, man, if only I could sing. Imagine all the singing I could do for God. If only I had nerves of steel. Imagine how much evangelizing I could do. If I had a face that wasn't made for radio, imagine all of the preaching I could do from the pulpit. If I was tall enough, smart enough, good enough, imagine what I could do for God. And we completely ignore all of the attributes, abilities, and skills that he has given us. Not to mention, there are countless examples of God using people to do things that they are 100% not qualified to do. When that person stops imagining if and begins to ask God how. So God specializes in revealing his power through us when we appear to the world as weak, fragile, and frail. In 2 Corinthians 12, 9 through 10, Paul tells us, "But he," speaking about God, "says to me, 'My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses, so that Christ's power may rest on me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong." So in those areas where we feel God's called us, but we don't feel qualified, it doesn't matter. Because God will get it done one way or the other. Does that make sense? So I was going to stop right here and ask, so does anybody have maybe an example of that that you would like to share? Maybe a time that you felt called to do something, but you didn't really know if you could do it, and you stepped out and it got done? Anybody? Somebody? Anybody? Brandon?
So, I guess I was called to be on the worship team, and everyone knows I'm not very... I'm kind of socially awkward, I guess.
no, so what?
I was like, I don't know. But, I mean, I got up there and did it anyways, and now I'm, pretty comfortable with it, I guess.
Still but socially awkward. But
well, no. Still socially
kidding.
Awkward,
I'm
but
kidding.
I'm a little more comfortable getting up in front of people now.
Yeah, so. Awesome.
I was going to say something a little different, along a little different lines, but in my job, I am, besides being a paralegal, my boss expects me to fix everything for him that is complex. And very often, it is something I have no idea how to do. And I used to get real frustrated and upset and cry and pray and all this kind of stuff because I had to fix something that I had no idea how to fix. But the Lord always gave me an answer. So I started cutting through the crying and freaking out and just started with how can I get this done? Because it is my job. That's what I am. And that's what I believe God has called me to be in the church as well. I'm not anything in particular, but I'm everything in general. I'm the fixer. When you got a problem, I fix it. And I believe God blessed me with that. It's called the gift of helps in the gifts of the Spirit. But that's what I do. So, and I believe God will give you the answer if you will just calmly go to him.
Awesome.
He's trying to tell you when you're freaking out, but he can't because you're too freaked out.
Exactly. Right?
So.
I was going to say that's been literally my entire ministry from day one, is God calling me to do something that I had no idea how to do. Even when it was just a soundtrack and not even a microphone. We had the songbooks. And what I've learned as God has advanced me in every area is that if I will just trust and obey and say yes and lean into the Holy Spirit, he equips me with everything that I need. And oftentimes it's beyond anything that I could ever picture or imagine. Even still now, getting up there, I always feel like I'm in way over my head. You wouldn't necessarily know that, but I feel that way pretty often. And I'm just amazed at how God can take someone like me and do something like that through me. It's literally been my entire ministry, even into the women's ministry, which is something that I never would have seen myself doing either because I don't like speaking in front of people. but again, just being obedient and in saying yes to the Lord and finding that he continues to grow those giftings and those abilities, and it's always like a supernatural thing, and it just constantly blows my mind.
All right. So that's awesome. But a similarity between what we just heard is people kind of developing a new talent or skill or ability. But that was basically from what I heard after there was a response, there was an obedience, there was a step of faith, right? Because, see, God doesn't need us to develop a new talent or ability before he can use us. He can use us where we are, how we are, right now, today. Now, does that mean that he won't stretch us? No. Does that mean that he won't refine us? No. Does that mean that we've arrived? No. And as I just mentioned, does that mean that we won't develop new skills or abilities? No. But by stepping out in obedience and allowing him to work through us, even in our weakness, we give him the opportunity to step in with his strength and his power to accomplish whatever he has called us to do. Because when you step out and you do what you've been called and you are not qualified and you do not have the skills in there, anybody that looked at you would go, there's no way that person did that. Then when it happens, it's obvious that it was because of God. And God gets the glory because you were faithful to step out and do it. So, as I mentioned, there are many examples of God calling people who aren't qualified, at least according to the world standards. But to go over all of them, you would basically need to retell the entire Bible. I mean, you've got patriarchs, judges, kings, prophets, disciples, many if not all of them called by God to do something that they wouldn't otherwise have done. In Matthew 28:19, Jesus commands his disciples, "Therefore go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I've commanded you. Surely I'm with you always to the very end of the age." Now, I did some research, and, you know, I don't know. Pastor can correct me if I'm wrong. But so these are the same disciples that couldn't stay awake to pray with Jesus in the garden, denied even knowing Jesus after he was arrested, scattered after his death, doubted after his resurrection, and these were the guys commanded to go out into the entire world and do something that, until this point, I don't think they had done, which was create disciples. I can't find one example of the disciples creating other disciples while they were with Jesus. As a matter of fact, Jesus basically did all of the recruiting and the discipling. And yet, Jesus entrusted the continuation of his earthly ministry to these 12 ordinary, sinful, imperfect men. And the gospel spread like wildfire. Today, it's estimated that there are 2,604,381,000 Christians in the world today. This isn't counting the billions who have come and gone in the last 2,000 years. All of that was accomplished by 12 unqualified men called to do something that they had never done before. It's enough to make you wonder, how much wood would a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck could chuck wood?
700 pounds.
Yeah, 700 pounds. That's the answer. So somebody was listening. So that's all I have. Does anybody else have any thoughts, comments, opinions, questions? Pastor?
I think, actually, the Bible says there's not many mighty, not many noble that are called. It goes down the list. So basically, the elite of God's ministry usually are nobodies that God brought to a place, because the reason we're made strong in our he's made strong in our weakness, as what you just said, we give him the credit. If you're naturally gifted, it doesn't mean God won't call you into something you're naturally gifted at, but most likely he's going to call you into something you're not, because then you depend heavily upon him. Or if you're naturally gifted toward it, there's going to be challenges put in front of you to keep you from getting the big head about what you're doing.
Right.
And that's what Paul said. I mean, Paul was so, he's the one that wrote that about when I realize when I'm weak that he's strong. It's because Paul understood, first off, one of the things I heard was they even said to him, well, you're pretty strong in your letters, but when you come, you're not very impressive. In other words, his stature and his visually looking at him was not necessarily threatening. Paul was kind of a little stumped over, you know, bent over guy that wasn't like robust and huge or somebody you would automatically listen to just because of the force of his size. And so Paul said, don't worry about it. When I get there, not only will I give you the word from God, but I'll give you, there will be the backing up of that word. So what Paul's saying, I'm not worried about my strength. What, and you shouldn't be worried about that, but you should be concerned that God will stand behind the words I give you, because they come from him, and they'll be backed up by examples.
That's right.
And so... so Paul absolutely, completely understood, without a doubt, and as we should. As a matter of fact, it should scare us a little bit if we start getting too comfortable, because then after a while, then it becomes, it could, like the expression familiarity breeds contempt, we could actually begin to do this out of rote, or just because it's a job, or just because is expected of me, and there's no heart to it. It's just, and there's a lot of people that can fake it a long time. But that should be a scary place to be. Don't ever let yourself get there. Always go back and say, God, really, I can't do it without you. If he lets you fall on your face, thank him for it. It's his grace.
Yeah. Well, and kind of going back, it made me think about it, what you kind of said at the beginning, is, you know, you talk about people that have skills and talents and abilities, and, of course, you know, God gave you those. You know, I believe he gives you those to use for his glory and for his kingdom. But in this world, how many people use those immense talents for themselves, right? So to glorify themselves, and they don't even attempt to utilize any of those talents or skills for God. And so then it all, so then what's funny about that is then that almost even makes you feel more intimidated and less qualified, because you have these people that have these talents, that have these giftings, that have these abilities, and they're using them in this other way. And so it's almost like God does that, and then he calls you to fill the role that they should have filled with the gifts that they have, but you don't have those gifts. Yeah. Does that make sense? And so so then it's even more intimidating, but then it's still an opportunity then for God to do that. But you know, but you can look at it and you're like, well, man, I can't do what they do. Like, how am I supposed to do this? You know? But he still, he gets his will done one way or the other. So JT has something.
I was just going to say, though, this is, first of all, it's a really good message. So appreciate you bringing it forward for us. But the fact that, you know, bringing it back to your the title, Training Up a Child, I think this is so important to instill in our children. I mean, I can think about examples with my own kids where I tell them to do something, like, I can't do that. It's first thing, you know, kids do. First thing we do to God is we say, we can't. Yep. I can't. Right, because you're thinking about what everybody else can do, and then you're looking at your own self, and you feel like, I can't do that. I'm like, you can do it.
Yeah, not with that attitude.
You can, right? And so, like, then once they do it, they're like, you know, they're proud of themselves. Like, wow, I did that. I'm like, yeah, you can. I told you can do it, right? And sometimes it's almost like kids are waiting for your permission to tell them that they can do something. And so it's almost like if we look at it that way, we put ourselves in the position of a child, and we look at God as our father, and God saying, do this. And we're telling God, I can't do that. I don't have the skills, I don't have the talent, I don't have this, I don't have that. We're really adept at telling God what we can't do.
Right.
And what he can't do, right? We do that a lot of times. God, you can't do that. Or God, I can't do that, right? And our kids do the same thing. They develop that. It comes by us naturally, right? It's the way we do. And God is looking at us as the father and saying, you can. I've given you that ability to do it. And so then we do, and it's like, oh, man, this is amazing. And he's like, yeah, I know. I know that, right? And it's the same thing with our kids. When we tell them to do something, like, I can't do it, and they do it, and they're like, oh, my God, I just did it. Like, yeah, I know you can do it, right? You have that ability, and I've given it to you. And it comes with training, right? And it comes getting better. Like, the first time they do it is not going to be awesome, but they're going to feel awesome the first time they do it. And it's the same thing with us. So we have to make sure, just like we're training up our children to do the same things that we do and even better, God is doing the same thing for us.
And we've talked about this before, but like, if you ask God for patience, he doesn't just give you patience.
No, he gives you an opportunity to develop patience.
He gives
right?
you the yeah. opportunities to develop the patience, exactly.
That's the worst.
I don't want,
isn't it? That's why I never pray for patience at all. You should pray for impatience. You know what I mean? So
I love that. Hey, let me say real quick. Yeah. A lot of people don't know. I mean, this is why your personal testimony is so important. And it may be old to you, but you need to resurrect it and talk about it from time to people. Pastor Prince, who pastors a church of 500,000 people, worldwide renowned, couldn't even talk without stuttering before. He talked about how God healed him of that, brought him out of that. But it actually shocked him when God called him to the ministry. I mean, he couldn't even talk good.
Yeah.
Well, there's so many stories like that. And that's what's so beautiful about God, that he just reaches out there and gets the nobody and makes somebody out of them. And that's our God.
He's absolutely. Awesome. That's what he does. Oh, Marcy?
Yeah, I know that's a surprise. Something that I've taken great comfort in, because my comfort zone's about a foot wide. when we look at the scriptures, we can find numerous examples of God putting us together and in this life at this time on purpose. It says he knits us together in our mother's womb. There are numerous examples in scriptures where he says, look, don't think, in Ecclesiastes talks about, don't talk about, oh, the good old days, that's not wise. It talks about him making us for this point in time and place. So
it's almost like
also,
he knew what he was doing, right?
Right. Yeah. And so also being our good father, anything he calls us to do, he's made us to do it. So as a father, he's just going to nurture us into that. And I remember Dad talks about this, people going, oh, I hope God doesn't call me to do this. I'd hate that. God made you to fulfill the calling that he's going to put you in. When you grow into that calling, it will be a pleasure to your soul. It will not be a kind of burden that smushes you down like that corporate job you don't want to go to. And for me, that is very comforting, because not only do I have to face a challenge, which I don't love, but I know I will become better at everything, and my soul, and from there out, I will be a more joyful person, and the world will be a better place because I'm living into the thing I was created to live into.
Absolutely.
And I guess for me, it's the world of difference from you're going to hate this to you might hate this for a minute, but man, you're going to love it in the end. You are going to love this work. And I mean, it says he's lined up our good works before us. He's prepared them all. It's like those people that set up all the crafts for kids and every little piece is set out. I love those people.
Well, and you know, the other thing, and I'm going to wrap it up with this, is that even if God calls you to do something, you know, and you don't know how to do it, but you step out in faith or whatever, there's still a development process, right? It's a very rare situation where he just supernaturally gives you an ability or a skill that you didn't have before, right? I'm not going to say it doesn't happen, but it's a very rare situation. You're going to have challenges. You know, I saw Levi crawling on the floor back there, and it made me think about it is, you know, so Levi's in a stage he's learning how to walk, right? And so I saw him earlier holding on to the stroller. There you go. I was going to say buggy, but that didn't sound right. Holding on to the stroller while his mom's pushing it, you know, and he's walking behind the stroller and he's learning. But if he were to let go of the stroller and try to walk, at this stage, he would probably fall down. Now, what parent would run over to Levi and say, Levi, I don't think God, walking's not for you. God didn't make you to walk. If he did, you'd be walking right now. You wouldn't have fallen down. Don't do that. Who would say that? Nobody. Well, Nate might. So nobody would say that, okay? So in other words, he's got to grow into it and he's got to learn. Even though God has placed in him the ability to walk, he still has to grow into it, right? And so I think that's the other thing to caution against is just because we say yes and just because we step out doesn't mean that it's all going to happen immediately the way that we expect, right? You know, maybe you've been called to preach to thousands of people. Well, that might start with talking to your neighbor, right? And you're probably going to screw up that conversation. But that's okay, right? You just continue to do that, right? Maybe you're called to sing, like Brandon was talking about. And, you know, maybe it's awkward getting on the stage. And you get on the stage and you get nervous and you forget the words and you forget what you're doing. And you're like, man, I just can't do this. Well, It's a process. It takes time, right? And so instead of focusing on what you can't do, focus on what you've been called to do and then step out, put the time in, put the work in, and let God develop that inside of you. And then that way, when it happens, you could say, man, look where I was, look what God did, look where he took me, and look what I'm able to do for him now. Does that make sense? So anyway, that's all I've got. So.